Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Dr. Jonathan Margolin, a superb chef, food photographer, and a podiatrist. Not your normal everyday combination of professions. Good evening, Dr. Margolin.
Hi, good evening, Chaim. How are you?
Baruch Hashem.
So thank you for having me on the show this evening.
How you managed to get that interesting combination of professions?
I'll start out first with my profession of podiatry that I've been doing now for about 16 years here in Teaneck, New Jersey. And practicing podiatry for this period of time, I've dealt with a lot of sick patients, a combination of people who I've treated. And while doing so and being in the healing arts, I always had a creative side that I wanted to satiate, and I always had a passion for cooking. So throughout my training and throughout practice at times where I practiced in different locations throughout the Tri-State area, I always had adventures of food and looking to see different things that I can bring about. And what it's done is it's actually satiated my creative side of being involved with cooking and that enjoyment of culture and being involved with that. So when I come back to medicine, the medical art and healing arts, I am more satiated and more focused on doing that type of work as well. So that's what brought me into cooking. So through some personal types of things within my life, other than professionally, I came upon one time and I said, you know, I really would like to take this a step further and try to get those creative juices satiated and more. And I was, as I was watching the Food Network and watching different programs, and say, you know, instead of sitting around and watching stuff all the time, why don't I enroll in a program and get more experience? So the thing that was so unique was, at the time, the Center for Kosher Culinary Arts in Brooklyn was open, and it afforded me the ability to be able to be in a program that was very well-rounded and kosher. So I took it upon myself to enroll at night after seeing patients during the day. And I did that about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So having that involvement was great. So I sat down and I was talking with a couple of chefs that I was working with. And we said, well, what are you going to do with this? So I wasn't going to give up practice in podiatry. My mother would not have been happy with about that as well, even at this point in life. Because
of course,
the fact
every
that,
mother thinks about my son, the doctor.
Exactly. So, you know, still needed to do something practical and being a doctor and, you know, getting a paycheck and doing things like that. And what are you thinking of becoming a chef? What are you going to do? Open a restaurant? What are you going to do? So after my training, I, at night, spent some time specifically at Steakhouse ETC here in Teaneck with
Chef Warshaw.
You know, right, Chef Warshaw that I was involved with. And I spent some time there seeing how things work and on the line. And being there was great. But yet, at the same time, I wasn't satiating my creative juices in any which way because I was a low man on the totem pole. You know, I had to start from someplace and work my way up.
Mm-hmm.
So after being a professional for a period of time, I just couldn't see myself having that, being in that level and doing that itself. So one of my mentors in school said, well, why don't you look to do something else and why don't you look to do some writing? So I enjoy writing. And that's what brought me into starting my food blog called Toke and Scalpel. Toke is a chef's hat, and scalpel is for what I do as a podiatrist. giving kudos to both worlds and having an involvement. And, you know, incorporating both things. Everyone's like, well, why do you want to talk about you being a podiatrist and you having this culinary background? And I said, because it makes me who I am. And it puts everything together as a whole. So over a year ago, I started the blog and I started recipe development and photography. And now at this point, I do some development for some companies. And I still am continuing with my blog at this point. What I'd like to do down the road is for people to actually taste my food, not just to see it and try the recipes, but for me to prepare things. So I am thinking in the future of possibly doing some venue or something like that to be able to bring people together so that I can cook for them and they can see what it is all about. My whole background itself, Chaim, is that, you know, for me, I wasn't always religious. I became religious with my family when I was around 12. Prior to that, I did not eat kosher, and I had experiences of having my palate incorporated with a variety of foods from the world. And what I wanted to be able to achieve with my blog was that, and where we are at this golden era of food and wine within the kosher industry, is that people realize that kosher food can taste good. And it's not the stereotypical just, you know, stuffed cabbage or corned beef or Dr. Brown soda that some people have grown up through Ashkenaz household, but that there is more out there for you to expand on. And I still think it's just the tip of the iceberg, and we're just getting into that, we're catching up to what's happening. And we're really producing a lot of talented chefs, and chefs who are not even Jewish, not even kosher, who are intrigued by being in the kosher world. And it's been an amazing ride so far at this point. You know, with what I'm doing as a chef and as a doctor, it's quite funny how they intertwine with each other at times, that I have patients and family members of patients who have found out what I do. So when they come to see me in the office, they say, well, can you take a look at this? I have this and this problem. We go through a couple of things back and forth. And then when we're done, they say, I have one more question for you. I say, what? And then we go into a whole discussion about food. What should I do about this? What should I do about that? And by the time they leave the office, I print out a recipe for them and they're on their way. So it's a pretty funny way in which things have become intertwined at this point.
One question I have for you.
Of course.
In the biography that you sent me, you said that you started cooking at a very young age, but it was mostly because of survival.
I wouldn't say survival. I come from a household that both.
Did you decide that it's more than just survival?
Right. Well,
that it is something that you felt passionate about.
Right, so both my parents are professionals, and growing up, I would come home and learn how to do things for myself. So while cooking and learning from my mother, my grandmother, and other people through my family, I would say that it became... You know, yes, it was a form of survival initially first when I was a kid because I wanted to be able to have certain things and to do certain things myself and have the independence as a whole. But yet, at the same time, while I was doing those things in the background, I realized how much enjoyment I had from it. So, you know, it continued on and I enjoyed it throughout, and I always did cooking even before I went to culinary school, and I always enjoyed it as a hobby. And the thing that what made it more concrete to me was personal things happened in my life, and I always said that I never wanted to say I didn't do something. And this passion of mine of wanting to bring food to people, which I find brings, you know, food brings people together, it breaks down barriers, it makes things a little bit more calm in whether the political setting or other settings itself. that people may not sit down and talk about things. And it brings people together, different traditions, different cultural differences, and I find it's just an important piece. So my thought is that instead of necessarily healing people physically outside, I want to be able to heal them in and out. To answer your main question, I believe it came more concrete as I got older with life's experiences and different things of what the purpose and why I was doing that as time went on. Of different things that you learn with life's experiences.
Sounds very, very interesting, but surely there must also have been some interesting anecdotes you can tell us about your work or things that happened through your work or when people find out that you're both a chef and a podiatrist. Can you tell us some such?
Right, like we were discussing before, it can be on a variety of occasions that I have patients in the office asking me questions and they leave with a recipe or they ask to see my pictures and my latest creations and different things of the sort. So people are really interested in it, and of another facet of what makes me who I am, of being a well-rounded individual. I always pride myself in knowing a little bit about everything and not necessarily knowing a lot about one thing. It's a great thing, you know. So I don't necessarily have other funny stories or things that have happened within my professional life as a podiatrist and relating to the culinary world. It's more in the lines of how people are really happy to hear about those pieces, because most of the time when you come to the doctor and you sit and you talk about things, they're, you know, even as a podiatrist, they're serious types of things. They're health issues. People are in pain or discomfort or have other things. And then after discussing some of that, we discuss a lighter element that makes everybody happy, you know, sitting down, having a good meal and a cooked meal and different things really heals you and makes people happy. And that's what I'm most happy about, that I'm able to bring all those facets to the table when I sit and talk with people.
So let me understand something. You're having been trained as a chef, being able to understand food and what it can do. Does that mean that you can also suggest to your patients a healthier, more delicious way of eating?
Yes and no. My philosophy is more in lines of in moderation of how I feel about things. But I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not someone who counts the calories and puts things together in such a way. But with having some education on both ends of it, I can discuss with patients of what things they may want to avoid or not eat, like if they're diabetic or if they have high blood pressure or other things itself, of how they can make certain things. But I won't say overall that the type of cuisine or cooking that I do is of the top of healthiest types of things. Again, I believe in moderation is very important, and how you can change certain things with recipes and still have things that taste great.
Now, explain to us, what is your favorite cuisine? Or if you don't have a specific cuisine, what type of dishes are your favorite?
So really, with growing up in the Tri-State area of New York and being in America, I do like New American cuisine. New American cuisine takes the melting pot of the United States and puts things together. Meaning the initial background of cuisine itself was French, and now within American cuisine, you have different facets of fusions that have been going on. Usually what I gravitate towards is more Latin cuisine, and also Asian cuisine. Having a little bit of those within Latin cuisine, spicy and can be notes of citrus and floral. And when you're dealing with Asian cuisine, you have umami type of tasting and other elements with it, which I find to be an amazing piece. And you can take different avenues and put them together and bring them as a marriage. Whether you're dealing with a Italian dish that you want to bring in with Asian fusion, or different items and stuff that make the United States the United States.
Okay. Can you give us an example of one of your favorite dishes?
One of my favorite dishes. There's so many. Things that I enjoy.
Give us an example and
types.
Tell us why you like it so much.
Well, again, it's an adventure for me. I can't say that if I can eat one thing over and over again, I wouldn't be bored of it. It really depends on the moment. I really enjoy a little bit of everything as a whole. You know, I can't say that it would be one dish that is like a chicken marsala, or it would be a meat gyoza, which is a Japanese type of dumpling, or dim sum, or different types of things itself. But it's a variety of types of things. I can't say one dish makes it all. You know, the thing that I enjoy is doing that melting pot. I mean, if at one meal, I would have different items from all over the place as a whole. You know, everyone gravitates towards meats and steaks and things of the sort. Recently, I've been doing more sous vide cooking, which is cooking under pressure, meaning that you take a piece of meat that you cook at a constant temperature over a period of time in a sealed bag with different spices and things of the sort that help to tenderize the meat and make more flavor with it. And those have been a really delicious one I had recently was I made a lamb, shoulder lamb, which I find here in the United States, lamb gets a bad rap. I find that more and more people now are starting to find if you cook lamb correctly and you have the right cut of meat, that it's very good and it's delicious, something that you have. You know, I can't say that there's just one thing that I have to have all the time. It's lots of, you know, little different things depending on my mood. And I think that's with anybody really, of what's happening. I'm like anybody else. I love cooking. I love putting things together, but I'd be the person who would love to go and to a restaurant and myself and be doted upon and have great culinary experience from the time you walk into the restaurant to the time you leave. So it's a little bit of everything.
So if I were to ask you if you were to be confined to a desert island and you could only choose one type of dish, you would have a very tough time choosing it.
Well, if I was confined to a desert island, I can tell you one thing I probably would love to have on the desert island, that would be an abundance of citrus, because whatever you have, you can use to make with it at the time. So that would be one of my favorite ingredients to use in my cooking, something that really adds a nice flavor, different things to that as well. But it's a tough call when you're on a desert island, because where are you going to have, you know, kosher food and this and that? You'll be living on coconuts and whatever vegetables you can find. So I'm sure you can't really make a curry because you can't find anything on the island. But you're dealing with a lot of bland food, I'm sure, at that time. But I guess if I was on a desert island, it would be fun to have... A I guess barbecue or something like that at the time, if you have something to have all the time at your disposal.
Well, in my case, for example, even though as a South American, I'm a carnivore to the core.
Yeah.
If I ever end up in a desert island, my choice would be cheese and tomatoes. Between those two and whatever I find on the island, I can come up with something very good.
That is true. That is true.
Now,
vegetables is a long way.
Yeah, vegetables and fruits, there's got to be some in a desert island, especially in the tropical desert island, right?
Sure.
Let me ask you this. Excuse me. We are back in to civilization. We've left the desert island. You said you like lamb a lot. Very good taste. Yes, it is delicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and you have your taste go more towards an eclectic type of kitchen rather than a specific ethnic kitchen.
Correct.
I understand that. Very good. So, once we have established that you like a lot of different cuisines, when you go to do a dish, do you do it the classical way, or you look at the classical way and then come up with your own embellishment, with your own changes?
I usually will change it up. So, a standard dish would not necessarily be a standard dish. You know, for instance, for this time of year, for Hanukkah, a typical potato latke, I changed up to make something called a hush puppy latke. So the hush puppy latke is a combination of a sweet potato, some onions, and a cornbread mix that you would use in there, along with some beef fry or beef bacon, how you would call it, within it, some chives, and served with, now another flair, would be a jalapeno lime aioli that I would serve it with, or a sticky, sweet cayenne pepper sauce that I use. So it's changing a variety of things that I put together. This recipe I put together and adapted from different things I've been exposed to. Some Southern cuisine, and along with also a little bit of Latin, involved with a little lime juice and jalapeno. And, you know, I find that it really changes it up a little bit than the normal, which I find delicious. Standard potato latke, very well crisp, which I enjoy, with onion, maybe a little schmaltz in there as well, which would be good. That's just an example of what I put out there. Like, for instance, I put up a recipe for a standing rib roast. Instead of a typical standing rib roast that most people would put garlic powder, onion powder, paprika, some other things itself, I made a Korean barbecue-style standing rib roast, which means that you're using other Asian cuisine into this rib roast that you normally wouldn't use with that. So that it brings it into another element that people can be tasting and doing.
Now, I understand what you said at the beginning, that you consult on cookery. Can you explain to us what exactly you do? What do you mean you're a consultant?
So, for instance, right now I do some work with nationally kosher cheeses, specifically the Sincerely Bridget line of cheese. And I've been developing some recipes for them using their product that people can use their cheeses in that may be a little bit outside the box. And I've developed a recipe and present it, take photographs of it, and then post that on my site and their site at this point. of what I've been putting together. Now in negotiations with other companies that may be looking to do the same thing with their products as well, to see where they can use their products in different types of recipes that you may not realize.
Very good. Excellent idea.
Thank you.
Not only is it good for the product manufacturer, because it exposes their product as something that can be used more than just out of the box, but as an ingredient towards something even more delicious. Also, from your point of view, it shows a lot of creativity. Now, people don't normally think of doctors as being creatives. In fact, we hope most doctors are not creatives. We want doctors, you know, to do things according to the book, but it shows you yourself are a very, very eclectic person. You have many, many interests.
Yes, I find that life would be boring if it was just standard.
Right.
So I like to have a little bit of everything and understanding it. And, you know, it makes it interesting, especially for my patients. You know, when I sit and I talk with them about things, I can talk about other things other than why they're there. And I find that it opens doors so that you're able to capture people's trust and that you're able to sit and have conversations about things. And when they leave your office of why they're there, not only are you making them better with treating their problem, but by having that open line of communications, it makes you feel good. Because when you go to the doctor or you're sick or in the hospital, everything is stripped from you. You know, your pride and everything as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's a really vulnerable time. So when you're able to engage people and to sit and talk about things, it makes them comfortable, it makes them at ease, it makes them open up to you, so that you makes it easier for you to be able to treat them.
Now, this afternoon when I mentioned to some people that my guest this evening was going to be both a podiatrist and a chef, some of them made some jokes. They thought it was extremely unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure that people have reacted that way to you directly as well. Has it happened?
Yes, very much so. Yes, like whether you're dealing with toe fungus or cheese or those are your favorite ingredients, I've heard it all, yes. Especially when I did an article about one of the cheese manufacturers that I put out there. People, they definitely kid about it.
Now, getting back to your photography skills.
And it's all good. And what it does is it brings attention to the situation. And then when people get pulled in and they visit my blog or they meet me and we have conversations about things, it makes it even more interesting.
Now, let's face it, photographing food is very different from other types of photography. How
True.
Do you go about it? What type of lighting do you use? And do you use lighting all the time or do you prefer, whenever possible, natural light?
I do prefer natural light on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I'm taking pictures within my kitchen or home or other places, you do get amazing shots with natural light. But I do have other types of lights that mimic outdoor lighting that I use.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on the scene, the background, what plating I'm using, a variety of things of what you'd be doing with your lighting. But it is tremendous key to getting a great picture. Along with the camera and the lens, and also,
mm-hmm.
you know, how you look at things. If you don't have a creative eye as well, it doesn't matter what bells and whistles you have, you're not necessarily going to get a great picture. It's really a challenge. I mean, I can sit for to do one layout, I could probably take maybe 75 to 100 pitchers, and out of those, a few, maybe 4 to 5, really pass what I want to present to people and what I like. Because there's so many different variables that happen when you're doing a photo shoot, and how things present.
Well, in my case, for example, when I do food photography, if it's at the restaurant, I have the problem that, A, the lighting isn't always the perfect lighting. More often than not, it's very bad lighting. And I don't have the luxury in a restaurant of taking many, many pictures of the same item. There are other people. I'm not the only person there. So often what I will do is, if I cannot use the existing light, I will just, I have a portable lightings, plus I have some reflectors, including a gold reflector, that will give it a warm type of color, although I do not always want a warm type of color. Sometimes I will just use a silver reflector and so on. I find that reflectors are extremely, extremely helpful item for a photographer, especially in food photography. My favorite lens, although it's not the one I use all the time, but I try to use it as much as possible, is an 85mm 1.4 aperture, which means that my depth of field is very, very small. And it draws the attention exactly to whatever it is that I want to emphasize in that dish.
Right. What so that's I use a 50mm 1.4 as well. And I totally agree with you. It changes what you're trying to achieve. But at the same time, you can use that same lens and get a wider viewpoint as well when you're opening the aperture, and you still get great shots with it. As far as going to a restaurant, obviously you can't go to a restaurant during the day all the time, but when you go to a restaurant, I always try to get a seat by the window if I am going to take pictures from there. I don't always walk around with my camera, so I am trying to have the art of taking pictures with my phone, which I find is very difficult. But I find that there are a lot of people out there who take pictures with their phone, and they get some great shots. But if I'm truly going for a photo shoot, I will definitely take my DSLR camera with me to get the right shots. And there are portable lighting, different things like that, different LEDs and some other types of lighting that you can take with you. As well, I've seen even people take pictures. They put someone else's phone on the light, and then they cover it with a napkin, and they use that as their lighting in the background. So there are little tricks of the trade while doing so.
What type of the camera
for myself,
do you use?
I use a Canon Rebel T5i, and I've been very happy with it. I've been again doing this for over a year and a half, and I've been fine-tuning my pictures at this point, and I'm very happy with them, but I'm always trying to get them even better. So whether it's changing the lens or possibly the camera as well as time goes on, because as we know, it can be very, very costly to make that investment.
Oh, yeah.
But we see. And I'm always asking lots of questions and sharing with other people within the community, whether photography or a photographer or other people who are food bloggers that take pictures too, to see how they do things. And that's what's so nice within this kosher food community, is that everyone is there to help each other, and it's been great.
Of course. In my case, for the last 3 years, I've been shooting with a Sony Alpha 99. And my lenses are all Carl Zeiss lenses.
Nice.
And, yes, it is very, very expensive. And you just have to be paying careful sometimes, but not on an assignment. I always carry a small Sony with me. And, you know, if I'm not on an assignment, whenever I leave the house, I always have a camera because who knows what's going to happen that I may want to photograph, right?
Yeah.
So this particular Sony, even though it cost me a fraction of my big one, still does incredible photography. The fact is, almost any current camera can do superb photography if you are willing to learn what the camera can do and you're willing mm-hmm. to work on the camera's strength.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, and that's what's been great, yeah, of learning back
yep.
and forth with this. I do find some people get frustrated very quickly when they're not getting the right thing, so their first answer is to go to a different camera.
right.
Before they've actually mastered what they have, which I don't feel is the right answer. Yeah, that's interesting. That would probably, if I can have my camera on a desert island, I would like a Carl Zeiss lens.
Yes, I totally agree.
If I can
actually,
get one of those
they
now.
They make them for Canon also. Carl Zeiss makes it for everybody,
yes.
Just about.
Yes. So it's, you know, I've gotten great shots with this right now, and but that would probably be my next step after that,
mm-hmm.
with possibly adding that into my armamentarium of lenses that I have at this point.
Okay, and we're just about out of time. Thank you very, very much for coming on
Thank
our
you,
program,
Ryan.
Doctor. It was a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Sounds good.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, one and all. And listen in to us next week, when we'll be doing a series of programs from Sotheby's upcoming Judaica auctions. Thank you very much, and good night, one and all.